Morning. It is 9:31. Sun Sounds of Arizona in Tucson. Thank you for listening. It's a live reading of the Green Valley News and the Sorita Sun for today. Sunny to partly cloudy today. High for us today is 99. Winds out of the south-southwest at 10 to 20 miles per hour. Tonight, some clouds. The low near 65. Winds out of the south-southwest, 10 to 15, and tomorrow mostly cloudy skies early, and then partly cloudy in the afternoon. High of 96, and winds in southwest at 10 to 15, and there is a chance of some rain, 40% next coming up on Sunday, and 10% on Saturday, as possibly the very early beginnings of the monsoon. Currently at 78 degrees, the humidity is 10%, the cloud coverage 17%, winds out of the south-southwest of 14 miles per hour. Mr. Sun came up today at 5:19, and he'll go away tonight at 7:22. A Green Valley woman went to Sprouts around 4 o'clock p.m. last Wednesday to pick up salmon and ended up witnessing a violent assault that ended in the arrest of a man and a trip to a hospital for a 70-year-old employee. The woman, who spoke on condition that she not be identified, said she had picked up her fish and was browsing the produce when she heard a nearby yell. Horrified, the man struck a Sprouts employee. She looked at this guy walking around. He had a phone in one hand and what looked like a crowbar. And the employee had been arranging items in the produce section when he approached him. He said something I couldn't hear, but as I was getting closer, he just started hitting her. And she said, "Stop it." And she started to run, but he ran after her. I know he got her in the neck and the arm and then in her back. I'd say he probably hit her 6 or 7 times. After dodging around several displays, the woman managed to get to the checkout area where fellow employees surrounded her with carts so that her assailant couldn't get to her, the witness said. And at the same time, another customer stood between the assailant and the injured employee, who was on the ground bleeding. The store manager assured everybody that she had already called 911, and the other employees ushered customers away from the assailant, the man standing guard, and the injured employee. The man didn't try to leave. He just kept looking at his phone and outside as though he were waiting for the police to arrive, according to the woman. Shortly afterwards, a police car after police car began to arrive. "It scared the expletive out of me," she said. "That's not something you expect to see here in Green Valley." Last week's attack began over a sandwich, according to court documents. And according to a probable cause statement, when officers arrived 3 minutes after being dispatched, they found Daniel Kovarik Jr., 42 years old, standing inside holding a baton. He dropped the weapon and was told as he was told to and was then taken into custody. According to the report, witnesses told officers that when the Sprouts employee told him they couldn't give the sandwich that he wanted, he got upset, took out a baton out of a holster on his hip, and began following her around the store. Witnesses said Kovarik hit a broom the woman was holding, breaking it in half, and then proceeded to strike her roughly 6 times, causing her to fall to the ground and shield herself with her forearm. The report said the woman sustained lacerations to her arm, bruised ribs, and a broken finger. Officers asked for a high bond for Kovarik, noting his propensity for violence. They noted it was the second time he had used a dangerous instrument with the intent to injure others and damage property. According to authorities, Kovarik was arrested March 17th after witnesses told authorities that he had attacked a vehicle at his parents' home with a metal baseball bat. Sorita Police Commander Manny Almato said at the time dispatchers had received a 911 call about a man standing on La Cañada Drive near Duval Mine Road swinging a bat at passing vehicles. While officers were en route, dispatchers received another call from someone stating that when they tried to drive around the man with the bat, he struck their windshield and the passenger side door. Shortly after that, a third call came in, stating a man matching the suspect's description was damaging windows on a home near La Cañada in South Rio Altar. When officers and Pima County Sheriff's deputies arrived at the home, they spotted the suspect in what turned out to be his parents' yard, and he agreed to drop the bat and get on the ground. Suarita police are seeking criminal damage, disorderly conduct and weapon, and obstructing a highway public thoroughfare with charges in the March case. In the latest case, Kovarik is facing multiple charges, including aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, dangerous instrument, aggravated assault, serious physical injury, aggravated assault, two counts of disorderly conduct, two counts of threatening and intimidating, and criminal damage. He was also arrested on a felony arrest for criminal damage that was issued by the Pima County Sheriff's Department in connection with the March incident. He remains in the Pima County Jail, and his bond has been set at $45,000. Well, when you live in a community of less than 500 people and about 30 miles from a good-sized community, Ellen Dersima says you tend to take care of each other. That's why she and other civic leaders from Aravaca have held regular brainstorming meetings lately. The topic, how to help Aravaca residents stay in their small community as they age and need more assistance. Aravaca Human Resources already has a meal program, a food pantry, community events and classes for its older residents. But Dersima asks, what happens when they can no longer jump into their cars and make the trek into town? And what happens when they need help with their medications or other daily activities? Then the group came up with an idea. Why not start a community where seniors could maintain their independence by living in tiny homes on the same plot of land where they can socialize with neighbors, share a community garden, get help with small tasks, and participate in activities? And then as they grow older and need more help, they could transition to more of an assisted living type situation. Perhaps, Dersima said, they could even convince a healthcare group to expand their services to include the tiny home residents. I guess it came to me because I worked at the community center for 26 years and I had a senior program, and now I'm an elder myself. But then when I was young, I knew these elders who were living alone, said Dersima, who's 68 years old. They were so lonely. They needed some help with this or that. They just needed somebody to stop in, look over things, and lend a hand, you know. And they're still collecting ideas, so Dersima does not know exactly what the community will look like. For example, people have offered their 4- and 5-bedroom houses to start off the project, and they've had other people offer land, she said. During the brainstorming, it came out that people could bring their own home. You could buy an RV and bring it. You could buy a shed and fix it the way they want it, or hire somebody to do so. I see a lot of people getting those storage containers and turning them into beautiful little casitas. So, you know, the vision can be endless, she said. A friend of hers even found students who made tiny homes and sell them to pay for other students' tuition. People are excited about the possibilities, Dersima said. The amazing thing is, I sent out a little group email to see, as the strong women of the community who are involved in the community with different organizations and nonprofits, and with one day notice, 11 people showed up. People know this is something we really need. In the coming weeks, they'll be writing a mission statement, researching county ordinances, and exploring funding options. We're all really working together, and Aravaca is really good at manifesting things for our people. We're a very tight-knit community, and we really respect our elders, and we don't want to just push them somewhere, Dersima said. We take care of each other. When my son died, it was amazing that the response gave me from the community. I mean, I have casseroles for months. There were fundraisers and everything to help take care of children, and that's the way our community has always been. Suzanne Kammerman, the executive director of Aravaca Human Resources, said that as the group continues to discuss their vision and explore their options, she's finishing a grant proposal for her organization's New Seniors Thriving in Aravaca, or STAR, program. Keeping seniors in their home has two branches to it. The two branches are care, you know, what care resources can we bring in to help them with their home, possibly with light housekeeping, socialization, camaraderie, whatever, even the phone tree, though we can even just touch base with them. Basically keeping our pulse on every senior care-wise in their home, Cameraman said. The second branch is repair. Many of Aravaca's seniors are of limited means and they live in trailers that are in need of dire repairs, Cameraman said. I want to be able to step in with repair services. What can we do to help that senior stay in their home and make it safe? You know, if there's a porch that needs to be fixed, if there's a grab bar that needs to be put in the shower, or a leaky roof that needs to be fixed, we want to keep them in their home, quality and safe, for as long as possible, she said. Cameraman and Dersima's long-term vision for an assisted living community might be beyond the scope of Aravaca HR, but they are on board with the idea of an independent, tiny home community. They could have a little tiny home and we could provide the services that we already do here at Aravaca Human Resources and have it in one place, Cameraman said. So we could ideally have a congregate area where people could come and sit down and have their lunch and then be able to just walk out your back door and back into your tiny home. Other seniors from around the valley could be transported to that central location as well. Ideally, a village caretaker would be on hand in the event of an emergency at night and somebody who could help out with repairs, she said. A lot of pieces would have to come together to make their dream come true, Cameraman said, but she's hopeful. Our grand vision is to have any little tiny manufacturing facilities to where we could actually create a workforce here in Aravaca, building our own homes, she said. Perhaps a partnership could be worked out where seniors without heirs could agree to leave their tiny homes for the next generation of seniors, she said. We'd like to kind of self-sustain ourselves through buying and selling properties. That's kind of a grand vision of being able to do that, but lots of pieces and parts need to come together into place in order to do that, she said. But it's just a matter of finding the right people, finding them at the right time that have the right resources. It's coming up on 9:44 here at Sun Sounds of Arizona. Mark DeGroft with you. Well, a Green Valley writer notches a national award. Author Duke Southard is no stranger to national awards, but his 11th book, Retreat from the Precipice, is the first time he stands on top of the others. Next Generation Indie Book Awards, the largest international award program for independent authors, announced on May 13th that the novel won the historical fiction category for the 1900s. His previous novels have been recognized nationally and internationally, but this is the first time he has won outrightly. The novel is about three families living in the fictional Pittsburgh city of Endicott City, New Jersey, during the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis. Throughout the two-week crisis, the families struggle to stay together and function while new threats and fears face them every day. I started thinking about the effect that that had on us, the missile crisis, and our family dynamics, because we were so young and we just had a three-month-old baby, he said. But what I started thinking about was other families that were more established. Each of these families have family issues they're dealing with on a regular basis, so now you throw in the Cuban Missile Crisis into the mix, and it affects how they deal with each other. If you put, this was the most research Southard had done for a book, he said, because it's crucial to get it right. And he said, if you put anything in there, it makes people question your credibility, then you're going to lose them. He began his writing career in 1971 after he and his wife Barbara moved to New Hampshire. He thought he could write in his spare time as a high school English teacher, but after realizing he had little spare time with a young family, he put it on hold until he retired in 1998. After publishing A Favor Return, he went on to write 10 more books, including Retreat from the Precipice, in several genres. He has published a memoir, a four-part detective series, and a book of short stories and essays. Cracks in the Wall is a fictionalized version of a 2009 murder near his hometown right after he and Barbara moved to Green Valley. 16 years later, the case remains unsolved. He will continue to use real-life experiences in his next book, which will be based off something that he learned at a conference just a few years ago. A keynote speaker gave a talk about how a significant emotional event, either good or bad, can change the life of a person regardless of their age. I began thinking about my life and significant emotional events and converting them into a number of characters, he said. And he's still developing the idea for the book. Jack Davis's love for the National Park System has not diminished after decades of service and regular trips, nor has his view of their importance for public well-being. Davis, who is 93 years old, retired from the National Park Service in 1993 after 41 years, including 15 years as a park ranger. He took on special assignments after retirement, eventually moving to Green Valley in the year 2000. He started with the Park Service at 17, taking a summer job at the Grand Canyon that wasn't getting too many takers shortly then after World War II. I got a job as a laborer on a trail crew, he said, adding that many veterans were using their GI bills to go to school rather than take national park jobs. They were looking for permanent jobs too, and these were just seasonal. He was living in Santa Fe, New Mexico when he took the job, but he was already familiar with the Grand Canyon. His father, John, who also worked for the Park Service, spending part of his career at the Grand Canyon, and Davis, who completed 8th grade at the Grand Canyon Area School, said the Park Service was a bit of a tradition, given his father also retired from the Federal Service. He was born in Tacoma, Washington, when his father worked at Mount Rainier National Park. Later on, the family moved to a new posting at Zion National Park and then the Grand Canyon. Davis's father finished his career as a regional manager in the Park Service, and he was posted in Santa Fe. We didn't have a high school in Grand Canyon in those days, Davis said, so I was going to have to go off to boarding school, but he got transferred to Santa Fe. He spent 6 summers doing seasonal work at the canyon, with the last coming as he wrapped up his college education in Washington. And despite the hard work, Davis said he continued working in the quarries and the trails to build some muscle all summer for his school years playing football. He thought his father had hoped that he would find a different career than the Park Service, but I tried and I didn't like it, he said. His path into the Park Service led him into working at 6 parks, plus Cape Cod National Seashore, and several other management positions throughout the country. Davis also met his future wife, Bobby, while working at the Grand Canyon. I met my wife-to-be the last seasonal year at Grand Canyon. She was going to Arizona State and had a summer job at Bright Angel Lodge. I met her there, and she waited, and when I got out of the service, we got married. Davis, who is an ROTC graduate, was called to active duty in 1953, serving 2 years in the Air Force. When he finished his active duty, he and Bobby got married, and he took his full-time posting to Oregon Pipe Cactus National Monument. It was great, he said. Of course, when you're first married, any place is pretty nice. He spent about 3.5 years at Oregon Pipe before moving to Cedar Breaks National Monument in Utah. He dealt with some tough situations during his 41 years, especially the 15 spent on the ground as a ranger. He recalls a woman at Cedar Breaks who threatened to jump off a rock point with about a 90-foot drop. She wouldn't have anything to do with anybody, and I hadn't any training in that, Davis said, but I knew how to get fairly close to where she was. So he quietly sat down around 40 feet away from her and passed the time with her until she was ready to come back down. In the meantime, the other people had gotten some ropes and talked her into letting me bring her back on one of the ropes, and that worked out. On one wintry night, Davis came across a truck on the side of the road with no headlights and heavy snow coming down. Local rangers were already on the lookout for poachers who had made their way into the park to take elk illegally. And they were headed toward a pass, and I told them, you better not try to go over there. David said, unaware the men were poachers, he checked to see if they had tire chains, which they didn't, along with working headlights. Davis said the Grand Tetons also had a situation where a group of five from Boston decided to make their way up a mountain with no experience and no notification to rangers of the trip. One of the hikers fell into a deep bergschrund between the rock face and glacier, leaving rangers without the climbing knowledge to mount a rescue into the crevasse. The toughest part of that for me is I meet with my parents, tell them that we were suspending operations, he said, that they lowered radios, but there was no indication of life, and they assumed that the hiker was dead. My folks were very understanding of what I wanted to do, and they accepted it. Davis still makes annual trips to the Grand Canyon, visits other national parks around the country, said it's hard to pick one, but if push comes to shove, he would go to the Grand Canyon. He holds tight to what the national parks are supposed to do, which he said is providing use and enjoyment for current and future generations while preserving its current conditions. And these days, Davis visits parks with a different viewpoint, taking in all the sights as any other person would. But he does look at those he worked at through the lens of a former ranger and superintendent, saying that they are still very well maintained. I'm very pleased with the small role I had to do with the idea and being a part of it, he said. Nice story. 9:52. If you had told Jalela Abalos when she was a freshman on the Walden Grove High School track team that she would one day be an All-American javelin thrower in college, she probably wouldn't have believed you. I probably would have told them, thank you for thinking that, but it was something that was not on my expectation list in whatsoever coming in her freshman year, she said. But it happened when Abalos took fifth in javelin for Paradise Valley Community College in the NJCAA-DI Women's Outdoor Track and Field Championship, which was held in Hutchinson, Kansas on May 15th. That made her a first-team All-American for the 24-25 season, a recognition given to top eight positions in individual events at the championships. It was the latest in a series of accomplishments for Abalos since she picked up the sport her freshman year of high school. She won a state championship with her senior season at Walden Grove in 2024, finished fifth in a national tournament in July. Finishing the season as the fifth best NJCAA women's javelin thrower in the country just wasn't on the radar for Abalos and her family entering her freshman college season. It was something that kind of shocked me and my family, she said. It was very, very exciting for it to happen. She grew up playing volleyball, basketball, soccer, gymnastics, and softball. Her parents, Art and Kimmy, encouraged her to give up softball and try track in the seventh grade. It was Jalady was initially a sprinter and a jumper, and it wasn't until her freshman year at Walden Grove when she started throwing the javelin. When she first started, it was just something different that we wanted her to try, Art said, not imagining that she would ever get this far. And she began training with personal javelin coach to develop her talent throughout high school. And while the training at Paradise Valley Community College was similar to what Abalos saw in high school, the skill level of college throwers initially intimidated but motivated her. I just kind of had to tell myself that I came to college for a reason, for track, to compete against these people, she said. I wanted to take advantage, and I wanted to see if I could get up to their level. It didn't take long to prove that, yes, she does belong. She finished sixth in her first match of the season at the Willie Williams Classic and was hosted by the University of Arizona. Her initial goal was to throw 145 feet by the end of the season. Her throw of 143 feet and 10 inches at the Willie Williams set a school record for the PVCC and a personal record. And she had just recovered from an injury, making it all the more surprising. I was not expecting to go in and hit that, she said. At that meet, I was just trying to go in and hit 125 feet. Just because I was out for a whole month before that meet due to an ACL sprain. I only got two throwing practices before that meet. Abalos finished ahead of her former training partner, Aislinn Martinez-Pompa, a sophomore at the U of A, and several other Division I athletes. It kind of made me excited for moving on to the next level coming after this year, knowing that I could possibly be throwing even further and hopefully at their level in the good days, she said. She also set records in front of her former teammates, coaches, and competitors. She was ranked as high as number 3 in the country during the season, although and her parents, they were at each meet. It was the best thing ever. I know so many people whose parents don't show up to any meets, and then they get upset about it, Abalos said. She assured her teammates that her parents were also there to cheer on the whole team because they knew some families couldn't attend. Art and Kimmy witnessed Jalayla break her school and personal record in the NJCAA regional track and field championships with a throw of 150 feet 9 inches. She set the records on her last throw at the competition, and it came at a time when she had already qualified for the national tournament, but wasn't getting the distance on her throws that she was at the beginning of the season. So she gathered herself on a short walk before the throw. When I was on that runway for the last throw, I kind of just gave up my all and stopped thinking about everything. And that's when I threw the 150. And once I heard what the mark was, I fell down on the floor crying and then ran to my parents and gave them the biggest hug. Art remembers his daughter's reaction, something he and Kimmy recorded on camera. Once they measured and threw out the measurement, she just dropped to her knees. It was awesome, he said. Abalos took 5th in the Nationals, earned All-American honors, and a younger brother, Gage, a dual sport athlete who just finished his sophomore year at Walden Grove, was in attendance with her parents. Seeing that my brother was there also kind of made it make you feel even better because he's my best friend, she said. He hasn't been able to make it to any of my out-of-state meets, and this was like the first meet he was able to make. And knowing that it was there to experience that way just made me feel really happy, knowing that I could be a role model for my younger brother one day. Following her sophomore season, Abalos hopes to throw javelin at Division I or Division II schools. That way I can continue to love track as well and then try and hit some higher goals and standards for the javelin itself, she said. And that, my friends, will take care of the reading of the Green Valley News for this Wednesday, the 28th day of May. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org. Just left-click on Broadcast Info and Audio, and then under the Programming links, left-click on On-Demand Podcasts. And you can listen to Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or on your smart home device or even on your phone with our app. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day.